is a commercial-free, streaming on demand presentation from 92.9 WBPN.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Paul McCartney was one of the four kings of music ever since the Beatles signed a one-year recording contract on June 4th of 1962. That deal allowed their record company, EMI, the option of three more one-year contracts. They wisely decided to pick up each one of them in subsequent years. Everything the four Beatles said, did, or recorded was eagerly gobbled up by their millions of adoring fans around the world for the next 7 years. The Love Fest came to a crashing halt when it was announced for the first time publicly on April 10, 1970 by Paul that he was no longer working with the group. John Lennon had told the group privately that he was leaving September of the previous year. Paul McCartney.
At the time, the conditions were so fraught with the breakup of the Beatles. There'd been all sorts of business problems with a new business manager, Alan Klein, coming in, and that had meant that relationships within the band had got very sort of tense, and there were all sorts of heavy meetings, and all of that led to the breakup of the Beatles. And for me, one of the great sadnesses about the breakup of the Beatles was that we were no longer making music together. Okay, the fact that we were mates breaking up was heartbreaking, but at the back of it all, there was also this thing of, what do we do, you know, what do we do with our music? So for me, the thing was to keep going. The only way I could do it that I could see without a lot of fuss was to just record some stuff on my own. So that was what I did. I got a recorder in my house and made some very basic recordings, which became McCartney.
Paul McCartney's first solo album, simply called McCartney, dropped April 17th, 1970. Over the next hour, we'll celebrate the record's 50th anniversary with music from its half-speed mastered vinyl reissue. It sounds like you're standing right next to him as he was creating the music. We'll hear most of that album, and Paul will take us back to when he, Linda, and their new baby Mary isolated themselves at their home with some basic recording equipment and emerged with this landmark album. We'll also jam in a few other immortal McCartney masterpieces. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Welcome to McCartney, All Access.
More guitar.
from McCartney, released 50 years ago on April 17th, 1970.
So, yeah, it has got a sort of indie thing. You know, it's what would now be called an indie thing. To me then, it was just for me knocking around, experimenting with some sounds and not worrying how it was going to turn out. I think that was one of the secrets. Because normally with the Beatles, you know, you'd think, oh, it's the next Beatles single. With this stuff, it was like I wasn't really doing it with anything in mind. It was only when I had a bunch of these songs together and people started to say, well, oh, is that your new album, is it? I said, well, no, sounds like it. And I was persuaded.
This is the story of a boy named Ted. If his mother said Ted be good, he would. She told him tales about his soldier dad, but it made her sad and she cried. Oh my. Ted used to tell her he'd be twice as good, and he knew he could, 'cause in his head he said, Mama, don't worry, no, Teddy wants you, taking good care of you. Mama, don't worry, your Teddy wants you, Teddy's gonna see you through. Came the day she found herself a man. Teddy turned and ran far away. Okay. He couldn't stand to see his mother in love with another man he didn't know. Oh no. He found a place where he could settle down, and from time to time in his head he said, Mama, don't worry, no, Teddy boy's here, taking good care of you. Mama, don't worry, your Teddy boy's here, Teddy's gonna see you through. She said, Teddy, don't worry, no, Mommy is here, taking good care of you. Teddy, don't worry, your Mommy is here, Mommy's gonna see you through.
One of the songs that had been written with the Beatles in mind and rehearsed by them but never finished, Teddy Boy by Paul McCartney from the album simply called McCartney. It's now reissued on half-speed mastered vinyl in its 50th year.
The fact that I was going to do it on my own in a very basic way was what had an effect on the sound of the album. Previously, we'd gone into Abbey Road, we'd had an engineer, we'd had a producer, we'd had studio facilities, and now I was in a kind of post-Beatles world. And in order to get recording and to keep making music, the easiest thing for me to do was to just get a recorder in at home and use my living room as a studio. Funnily enough, which is what loads of people do now, you can do that. Then nobody really did it, but I just said, look, you know, let's get one of the machines that we use in the studio, which is a Studer 4-track. They were state-of-the-art machines. So, yeah, I just got this recorder in the living room, and when I had a minute, I'd just go in there and make something up, set the drum kit up, figure out how to drum it, do a test drum track, listen to it back on headphones, I think, and if I didn't like it or if the snare drum wasn't loud enough, I'd just move the mic a bit closer to the snare drum. It's a very basic, very primitive way to record, but it worked fine. There's an energy to record in that way. There's an intimacy that kind of seems to come over. So yeah, I just got the recorder, plugged virtually right into the back of it. I remember just plugging the mics straight into the back of this great big Studer machine. And I just recorded drums, bit of guitar, bit of bass, sang a bit, played a bit of electric guitar, thought, yeah, that'll do. And suddenly I had a bunch of tracks, you know. I just kept going. I thought, what haven't I got? Oh, I haven't got an acoustic number. So I did Every Night.
Every night I just want to go out, get out of my head.
to get up, get out of my bed. Every night I want you to lay out, and every day I want to do. But tonight I just want to stay in and be with you. And be with you.
McCartney's song of domestic bliss, which was inspired by his new bride at the time, Linda, Every Night. There was always a mystery surrounding the end of one of the three instrumentals on McCartney, Hot as Sun / Glasses. And to clear up this mystery, the man who created it in the first place, Paul McCartney.
When I was a kid in Liverpool, we had a piano at home that my dad played. So I used to tinkle around on it. I'd had piano lessons, but I didn't get on with them. So I used to just make stuff up and try and find things. And I found just enough chords to make what I thought was going to be a kind of sophisticated kind of Rat Pack type song. You know, I was thinking, well, if I'm going to be a songwriter, it would be really cool to have a sort of ooby-scooby-doo kind of song, you know. So I did this and wrote this little set of words and come up with this idea. And it was like, you know, if she just runs to you and you snap your fingers, she's committing suicide. You know, she's, you know, in that meaning of the word, oh, that's suicide if you do that, darling. So that was the basic idea of the song. And I had it from when I was, I don't know, 16 or something in Liverpool. And so I did it as part of those recordings when I was on the piano. It was actually on the end of the bit of tape because I recorded loads of songs and I didn't... You, normally when you make recordings, you leave a lot of space at EMI in case you go over the tail end of the previous song and then they do the next song on a, you know, 15-minute tape or something. But I couldn't be bothered. So mine were like very close. It was like... And being my next song, I was being very economic with my tape. So it was right there when I was mixing. I thought, well, I can't have that. So I faded it out. And it became something that intrigued people. They said, what is that? What's going on? So it was great when looking through the tapes for the remastering, we found the whole version of it, which, as I say, butted onto the end of one of the songs, the one that it follows on the McCartney album. So we just thought, oh, right, so that was it. So we mixed it kind of properly. And I thought, well, it will be fun for the fans to find out the mystery of what that snippet was. And that's what it was. It was me doing my Vegas shtick.
I'd call it
suicide. Da 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 da.
Just a snippet of the previously unreleased song Paul wrote for Frank Sinatra originally, Suicide. That whole song was included on the super deluxe version of McCartney released back in 2011. Paul McCartney formed his band Wings after the release of his second solo album, Ram, Paul and Linda McCartney.
We'd always said, you know, the Beatles is a really hard act to follow, and we'd always pitied other bands that had to do it. So suddenly I found myself in that position. And it was difficult, but instead of just putting together a big superstar lineup, what we said is we'll go back to square one. So we just did it like we were just kids on the block. We got together. I asked Linda if she wanted to be in the band. She said, sure, you know.
And when Paul asked me to join a group, you know, get a group together with him, I went, but I hated piano lessons and I can't really play. He said, there's middle C, you can be keyboard player. Paul McCartney is like some tennis pro going, do you want to play tennis? I go, I don't. Mind your keyboard's easier, I think. I was innocent, and I, you know, so they say I sang out of tune, big deal. Most punks do, and I love punk. I like rough. I like a rough edge. I don't like perfect and beautiful, so I fit in nicely. I'm the rough edge.
And we just went out, we made our mistakes in public, and we just worked at it until we got it right, and eventually we came to the States in 76, and we had a great tour.
As Wings found its legs and eventually toured America, Linda made many contributions, including an essential part of Paul's huge theme hit from the James Bond movie, Live and Let Die.
She wrote the middle section. It's like a little reggae section, and she plays the piano in that. And when we were on tour, she played the whole keyboard thing, which people sometimes used to say, oh, you know, she's not really playing and stuff, but she was. And I tell you, to learn the keyboard part to Live and Let Die, you've got to know what you're doing. That's hard. I mean, it's kind of big orchestral thing on the synthesizer, and it's quite complicated chords. It's not just like A, D, and E. You know, there's some complicated stuff in there. So we had a great time, and it was lovely.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die.
Live and let die.
From Wings Over America, the triple live album by Wings, released in December of 1976, Live and Let Die. The album was recorded during the American leg of the band's 1975-76 Wings Over the World tour. It hit number one on the U.S. Billboard album charts and peaked at number eight on the U.K. album charts.
It was not using muscles, Beatles or not.
We'll exercise our oral canals with Paul when McCartney All Access returns in a few minutes.
Now playing even more of the songs you love from 92.9 WBPM.
Thanks for coming back for more of our all-access celebration of the 50th anniversary of Paul McCartney's first solo album, McCartney, now reissued on half-speed mastered vinyl in its 50th year. Without a doubt, the song from McCartney that Paul has played probably in about 98.3% of the concerts he's done since April 17th of 1970 is Maybe I'm Amazed.
Yeah, Maybe I'm Amazed sums up the time for me. You know, Linda and I had just got together, and that song was my amazement at getting with this great girl. I think it just worked. I didn't really stress out over it. I just made this song up and thought of lyrics like, you know, hung me on a line, pull me out of time and things. Just little phrases that occurred to me about this relationship. So yeah, that sums up the period and the feeling probably best for me. And I think it would be the one off the album that people would probably say is like the best song on the album. I'd never know what's a single. You know, I always do the wrong thing. It's kind of funny. And I don't mind that I do, you know, you can't figure everything out, you know. I never saw Get Back as a single. You know, people have to say to me, I think it was Twiggy, said, "Oh, that's great, that one is." I'm going, "What? It's just a little jam." I said, "No, it's like it's great, you know." I'm going, "Oh, yeah, okay." And I didn't think it was much good. And so same with Maybe I'm Amazed. I thought it was nice and I enjoyed it personally, but I wasn't sure whether other people would like it, you know. So as I say, I'm hopeless with singles.
Baby, I'm a man. Baby, I'm a man.
I'm Amazed from McCartney, the debut solo album from Paul celebrating its 50th anniversary. This groundbreaking record is now reissued on half-speed mastered vinyl. Now, some folks have suggested that Paul's first solo album after the breakup of the Beatles was him getting a chance to flex muscles he hadn't been able to use as a member of the Beatles. Not so, says Paul.
It wasn't so much the muscles I hadn't had a chance to use in the Beatles. It was keeping going. It was not using muscles, Beatles or not. It wasn't that I was not allowed to do stuff in the Beatles and then suddenly I was allowed to do it on my own. It was more a question of I did stuff with the Beatles, then suddenly the prospect was looming that I wasn't going to do stuff. And that was frightening. So I just thought, well, I'm just going to do stuff for my own pleasure. And then I played it to a few people and they sort of said, wow, you know, that's amazing, or that's interesting, or hey, that's cool. So that was what happened. I finally thought, well, you know what? This is an album. It's a quirky one, but it's an album. I just kept going. I thought, what haven't I got? Oh, I haven't got an acoustic number. So I did Every Night. Thought, what haven't I got? Oh, piano number. So I do Made Me Amazed or whatever, you know. And some little instrumentals. Those were just for my own fun, like Mama Miss America. They're quirky little things, but the nice thing is now I get a lot of people saying to me, oh, wow, you know, that was a bit groundbreaking, you know. I didn't think of it like that at the time, but it is something that a lot of people now do. You know, it's much more commonly done now.
That would be something, that really would be something, that would be something, to meet you in the falling rain, mama. In a falling rain. Beach in the falling rain, mama. Beach in the falling rain. That would be something. Really would be something. That would be something. Beach in the falling rain, mama. Beach in the falling rain. Beach in the falling rain, mama. Beach in the falling rain. Beach in the falling rain, mama. Beach in the falling rain. That would be something. It really would be something. That would be something. To meet you in the falling rain, mama. Meet you in the falling rain. Meet you in the falling rain, mama. Meet you in the falling rain. Meet you in the falling rain, mama. Meet you in the falling rain. Meet you in the falling rain, mama. Meet you in the falling rain.
That would be something from Paul McCartney's first solo album, cleverly called McCartney, and originally released 50 years ago on April 17th. Through the years, many people have speculated about the cover of the album, that it might have something to do with Paul's life, which had been a bowl of cherries with the Beatles up until then, and was now in chaos. Once again, not so.
No, it's not a bowl of cherries. What it was Linda and I were on holiday, and there were lots of birds outside the little villa we were renting, and there was a little low wall. And what we used to do, we'd go to the bar and catch some glacé cherries And we'd sort of say, can we have a couple of them? And the guy would say, yeah, sure. So we'd take home a bunch of them. And we found out the birds really loved them. So we placed them along this wall. But what we did was we took one of the shots and masked it out so you couldn't tell it was a wall. It just looked like a, you know, gateway through space, highway through the universe kind of thing, with cherries on it, you know. And it was all very mysterious, you know. But we just liked the image that that made and thought, well, you know, that's kind of funky image for an album cover. Well, in fact, we did do that, because that was the cover.
Motor cars, handlebars, bicycles for two, broken-hearted jubilee. Parachutes, army boots, sleeping bags for two, sentimental jamboree.
Song that highlights one of Paul McCartney's extraordinary talents, the gift of melody. That's Junk, another tune that Paul had written and rehearsed with the Beatles, but never finished until McCartney.
I'm part of the reappraisal brigade, because whatever went down, I got caught up in it.
Forward the reappraisal brigade. Was there a man dismayed? Not, though the soldiers knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply. Theirs not to reason why. With all apologies to Alfred Lord Tennyson, we'll find out what that's all about when our nationwide 50th anniversary celebration of McCartney All Access circles round to your ears again in a few minutes.
The variety is the difference. 92.9 WBPM, playing just great songs.
I'm so glad you could gather around the radio again for our last segment of McCartney All Access, celebrating the reissued release of Paul McCartney's debut solo album on half-speed mastered vinyl. You've heard the story of the front cover of the album. Now Paul tells us about the McCartney back cover and all of the other images used for the inside of the record.
And then the back cover was a picture of me that Linda took with my then baby Mary in my jacket, which was, you know, it was cold. I used to just put in my jacket. But what happened was we had a bunch of photos that Linda had taken knowing I was going to release an album. So she took a bunch of pictures of me with a guitar, me standing against the wall in the garden, etc. And we sent them to a friend of ours, David Putnam, who's now Lord Putnam, my liege. He looked through them all, and we got back to us the next day. And he said, well, there's only one. We said, oh, is that? He said, yeah. He said, which one's that? He said, well, the one with the baby in the jacket. And when we saw it back, we were like, oh, it's so obvious. You know, sometimes it really needs someone else to point something out to you. You can be good at what you do. You know, then suddenly somebody will say, that's the obvious one. And then you go, oh, yeah, it's so obvious. And so that became the sort of portrait shot, which now I think people think of as the album cover. But we were just into doing it, you know, any way we wanted. And not necessarily going down the official route. I think that was one of the things, you know.
Was Lonely from McCartney. Paul McCartney continues to tour all over the world, playing to deliriously happy fans in stadiums and arenas.
People say, well, why do you do it? You know, why are you still doing it? And the honest answer is just because I love it. It's like a football, it's like any sports star. When you ask them, you know, particularly when they get a later stage of their career, you ask them, when are you going to retire? When are you going to do that? And, you know, they nearly all answer, you know, when I can't do it anymore. Or, you know, when I don't like to do it anymore. Well, I'm loving it. And I feel kind of fitter than ever, strangely, which is kind of bizarre. But, you know, one of the things is that the way we're touring now, we don't just go out crazy for 4 months. Because then you can get fed up and tired and start to hate the whole thing. The way I'm doing it, we have time off. So it's turned out to be like a fantastic balance. And I'm really enjoying playing with the band for the audiences, you know, probably more than ever, actually. And we're doing some great gigs, you know. This is the other thing, is because it's not just a straightforward tour. So it's fun, you know. And yeah, I don't even think about the physical side of it. I just get up there, I do it. And I feel better when I finish the gig. I might feel a bit knackered, you know, but I feel better than I did before the gig. It's very energizing.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You were meant to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it. Anytime you feel the day.
fellas, just a man. Come on. Not just the ladies, just the girls. Come on, girls. And the ladies again, you're so good, I like them.
From Amoeba Gig, a live album by Paul McCartney taken from the recordings of a secret performance in front of a small audience at Amoeba Music in Hollywood, California on June 27, 2007. The entire performance was released in July of 2019. Unfortunately, that's all we've got time for right now. But before we go, let's give Paul the last word on McCartney, an album now regarded as a classic, but at the time of its release, it met with some critical BS.
I'm part of the reappraisal brigade because whatever went down, I got caught up in it. So I assumed that a lot of stuff I did then was no good. But now when I go back to it, I sort of think, oh, that, I remember why I did that. There was a reason for it. It wasn't just some flippant off my head gesture. I actually was trying to do that. And so, yeah, looking at it now, like a lot of things in retrospect, it looks better than it looked to me then.
McCartney is available in glorious sonic splendor on half-speed mastered vinyl in its 50th year. McCartney All Access was produced in New York and New Jersey by Near Perfect Productions for MPL Capital UME Records. All rights reserved. No portion may be reproduced without the written permission of the producers. Special thanks to Aoife Corbett of MPL Communications and to Jamie Hartley of UME. I'm Dan Meir. Thanks for listening.